In 1704, a Scottish mariner called Alexander Selkirk was marooned on a small, uninhabited island of the Juan Fernandez Archipelago, 400 miles west of the coast of Chile. He lived in a cave, ate 500 goats, and when at last he was rescued and returned to England, his story was much celebrated and inspired the Adventures of Robinson Crusoe, which is why nearly three centuries later, the island on which Alexander Selkirk was marooned for 4.5 years is called Robinson Crusoe Island, and its one small community is called Daniel Defoe Village. One of the other two islands in the group, 60 miles away, is now called Alexander Selkirk Island as a sort of consolation prize for the fact that, while truth may be stranger than fiction, fiction is what the public actually likes. There was, of course, no Man Friday. Selkirk had to fend for himself, so once his small stock of ammunition was exhausted, he kept himself supplied with goat flesh to eat and goat skins to wear by the simple expedient of learning to run faster than the goats. Apart from the goats and a few cats, the only other companions in his solitude on this small island were 3.5 million large and very noisy fur seals. One of the main features of the fur seal is, of course, its fur, which is thick and warm on its underbelly. And when humans discovered them, they also quickly discovered that they liked wearing seal skins almost as much as the seals did. And there did seem to be an awful lot of them. When the navigator Philip Carteret visited the islands in 1766, he said he thought that if many thousands of them were killed in one night, they would not be missed in the morning. This may have been roughly true. Unfortunately, more than 81,000 nights have passed since 1766, and there are now noticeably fewer than 3.5 million seals in the morning. To find out exactly how many Juan Fernandez fur seals there are left after two centuries of slaughter, Mark Cawardine and Douglas Adams have come to visit Robinson Crusoe Island.
It's terribly noisy at the moment because we're sitting in a wonderful old six-seater Cessna aeroplane. There's the three of us in the plane, plus the pilot, and a couple who I assume must live on the island with their baby.
Daniel Defoe translocated the story of his fictional castaway to the Caribbean, but the island where Alexander Selkirk spent 4 real years is not a sunny paradise. Seen from the air, or indeed seen from almost anywhere, it's a forbidding place with black, jagged cliffs rising high out of the water and jutting into the low clouds above them. There's practically nothing in the way of beaches. Indeed, few places it's even possible to land a boat. And boats are the only way to get around the island. There are no roads going anywhere. It's a 3-hour boat trip from the village to the only place that it is remotely possible to land an aeroplane. And it does seem to be only remotely possible.
I must say, I can't see anything even remotely like a landing strip. It looks like a mountain range sticking out of the sea. And even the pilot seems to be looking at it slight sense of, well, what do we do now? Yeah, I can just see a sort of landing strip ahead of us. Probably the least good landing strip I've ever seen. It looks like just a sort of mud path laid along the top of the mountain. This is rather a tense moment, actually, isn't it, Mark?
I think this is a joke. It's just a bluff to see if we call it before he hits the ground.
Here we go. We're going down. It is just a mud path, and we're going down, and there we are. We hit. God. I think we've made it.
We were met at the end of the pier by a very old man with a big grey beard and a woolly hat pushing a wheelbarrow. And he turned out to be what can only really be described as the official Juan Fernandez porter, because all our bags were put into the wheelbarrow, and slowly and carefully he pushed it the 50 or 100 yards up to our hotel, stopping three or four times on the way to catch his breath.
We didn't really know what to do about it because he was so slow. It was obviously such a strain for him, but for some reason I couldn't sort of go and take the bags away from him because it would sort of remove from what he felt he was there to do. We've seen him around the village the whole time, and his job seems to be to nod companionably and comment on the direction of the wind, which is, you know, it's nice work if you can get it.
It's quite sweet, really. I think all the villagers sort of look upon this as his main task and let him do it to keep him busy. There are no seals in the village, but the beach where his cave is was covered in seals, so many of them that Selkirk couldn't sleep at night because they're all roaring and shouting at one another, and he complained about it in his writings. Well, that is rotten luck, isn't it, actually, to come to an island, and find the only cave, and still can't get a good night's sleep.
I mean, how many people live in this village?
550. Actually, at the moment, they're probably nearer 500, because between September and May every year, 45 to 50 of the islanders move to Alexander Selkirk Island, 90 kilometres away, to do lobster fishing during the summer months.
But the irony of it is that it's the only place in all our travels so far we've discovered where the tourist industry is actually declining, because they're setting about marketing the island in entirely the wrong way. I mean, they've managed to take one photograph of the only palm on the island, which is sort of hidden in the forest somewhere, and feature that. And they also feature a beach, which is the only beach in the island, which is apparently it's impossible to get to. And they're trying to promote the idea of it as some tropical paradise, which it simply ain't. On the other hand, the place is actually absolutely delightful.
It's not only Alexander Selkirk and Robinson Crusoe. There's an amazing history of pirates and buccaneers and shipwrecks and ships coming in to recover from the journey around the Cape. And, of course, it's got the fantastic wildlife, so if they try to attract tourists with all these different aspects, I'd have thought it'd be a fantastic destination.
What do you do if you are born on Robinson Crusoe Island? There aren't a lot of options. You either fish for lobster or you don't. Life here is very, very quiet indeed. Well, quiet-ish. A few years ago, it was so quiet that the islanders deliberately imported a noisy species of frog because it cheered the place up a bit. It is a measure of the desperation of their boredom that they are the only people I've ever met who have actually gone out and bought a satellite TV dish. So they now watch American cop shows. And that, of course, only increases the frustration of the young people who would love to be able to crash cars and shoot people in Armani suits themselves. After dinner tonight, we went out onto the pier and encountered two small boys who were playing a game, which involved one small boy whipping at another with a metre-long leather thong. And we wondered if he might be destined for a career in the Chilean police force. But even someone of such talent will never be able to afford to move to the mainland. So there is resentment in the air. The kids play ghetto blasters all night to drown the sound of the frogs, while the older islanders just hope for a better life after this one and parade through the village on Sundays singing hymns. We've arrived now at the most famously deserted part of Robinson Crusoe Island, which is Alexander Selkirk's cave, where he lived for 4 years and 4 months after having had a bit of a tiff with the captain of his ship, where he decided, right, blow all you, I'm going to go and sit on a desert island for 4 years.
I shouldn't think it's very warm because it's facing the sea. The sea's about 50 yards away, and there's a very big entrance. The entrance is as big as the size of the cave, and
yeah, I mean,
if there's a sea wind or it's raining, you think it gets soaking wet.
But I would imagine, I mean, if you're trying to shelter here, you would actually cover the thing with goat skins, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Because apparently he lived largely on goats and used goat skins for clothes and bedding materials.
Yeah.
When Alexander Selkirk was living in his cave here, this stony beach opposite would have looked completely different, because it would have been covered from end to end in fur seals and southern elephant seals. And he couldn't even go for a walk along the beach because the seals were so tightly packed together, they just didn't leave enough space to step on. The estimates for the number of seals on the islands at that time ranged between about 3 million and 3.5 million, which is quite extraordinary. And it was soon after Selkirk was rescued in 1709 that large-scale sealing operations really began. And they reckon that there were as many as 14 sealing vessels working here at any one time, shipping between 2 and 3 million seals every 4 or 5 years. And not surprisingly, within the space of 50 or 100 years, virtually all the seals had disappeared. And of course, the Juan Fernandez fur seal almost became extinct.
Now, if you walk along the beach in front of Selkirk's cave, and you look for a... let's see. No seals at all.
We're in a small boat on the way to one of the main seal rookeries on Robinson Crusoe Island, and we've just come across an enormous number of Juan Fernandez fur seals in the water and on the rocks on one side of the island, and they're literally about 6 or 7 feet away from us, not at all frightened of us, in fact more inquisitive than anything. Now, these are all females. They haven't got the furry mane that the males have and that give the species its name. This is absolutely superb. The water's really clear and we can see a number of fish underneath the surface.
Soaking
the seals. In fact, it's interesting, the seals' eyes are as good above the water as below the water. And you can see them looking at us. They can see us quite clearly. They only see in black and white.
Oh, really?
They don't see in colour. But the point is they can see in very low light, and it's really a choice between seeing in colour or seeing in low light. And they obviously need to be able to see fairly deep under the surface. They use a combination of eyesight and their whiskers for catching the fish. And in fact, what they do is they actually sense the vibrations of the fish swimming underwater.
They do very much look like marine dogs, don't they?
They do. I mean, that's basically what they are. They evolved from dog-like ancestors. They're adapted to living in cold water. They've got blubber to keep them warm. The problem with that is that on a beautiful day like today, they've got a problem of overheating. So what they do is they stick their flippers or their tails up above the surface of the water, and the wind comes along and takes the heat away.
Their side flippers actually look very much like a sort of bird's wing made out of black PVC.
That's effectively what they are. If you compare these flippers with penguins' wings...
Yeah.
You see them flying underwater.
There was a seal just sort of playing around just by the side of the boat a moment ago. And so I leant in and touched it. The first time I actually touched a seal, patted it and stroked it for a moment or two, whereupon it dived and then came back up and thrust its head right up in front of me in a very sort of stern, rebuking, who did that kind of fashion? They do have this wonderful sort of Colonel Blimp expression.
My soaked. I was just leaning over the side of one, possibly the same one that Douglas touched, and it was right up next to the boat. And as I... excuse me, I've got a mouthful of seawater. As I leant over the boat, it splashed with its flipper, and I'm now drenched, and both my cameras are dripping with seawater, and the seal swam off looking quite pleased with itself. Moral of that story is don't go touching seals over the edge of the boat.
We stopped for lunch on the other side of the island, about 3.5 hours boat trip away, put down the anchor. Within a few minutes of arriving here, one of the men on the boat got a short line together with a bit of fish for bait and dropped it over the side. And no more than 10 seconds later, he'd caught a beautiful little fish, about 6 inches long, silvery grey body with yellow fins and yellow tail. Pampanito in Spanish. I don't know what the English name is.
Well, I'm having a go now. The first time I threw it in, again, I got... Oh, here's one. Hey, hey.
Oh, brilliant.
Right. There's a Pampanito. Oh, it's a big one.
Soaking, hey, hey. It's soaking the tape recorder. That's quite good. Okay. About 8 or 9 inches, that one.
The fur seals organise themselves into harems. Or rather, the male seals organise the female seals into harems. This keeps the males happy, and the females don't seem to mind either way. Giving birth to baby seals and making new baby seals are both activities that can only be carried out on land, and this therefore involves a certain amount of synchronization. Every year, around November and December, when the weather is sufficiently clement, the female seals come ashore to give birth to their pups and look after them for their first few weeks of life. Since this is therefore the only chance that the bull seals get to impregnate the females come into heat almost immediately after giving birth. The bulls jealously guard their own harem to make sure that none of the other bulls get to their mates before they do in the short, crucial period after they've given birth. The odd thing about this cycle is, of course, that the gestation period for a baby seal is a lot less than a year. So the fertilized egg spends many months inside the mother before it finally implants itself in the womb and starts to develop, just in time for the end of the next year, when the females will once again climb up onto the land to give birth, and the males will spend another month of doing what males like most, mating, fighting, and getting generally overwrought.
There's about 4 males here. They're the biggest of the animals. They're about 7 or 8 feet long, some of them, and very heavy, really powerful animals with big heads, big snouts, and of course the furry mane that gives them their name. There are also a number of females, probably about 25 or 30 females altogether in among the rocks. They're much smaller, 4 or 5 feet long, and much slimmer. And then as well as the males and females, there are the pups, which are about 5 or 6 weeks old at the moment.
Look, there's a very small little pup here that's desperately trying to get up this bit of rock. He's trying to get himself thrown up the side of the rock by the wave when it comes, and then he doesn't manage to get quite enough. There he is! Yeah, he's made it.
Yes,
he just managed to get enough purchase just high enough up on the rock before the wave receded again.
Have to be tough little things, don't they? Getting bashed against the rock by the waves. The pups remind me of cats that have fallen in water and look really half-drowned and bedraggled and sorry for themselves. There it is. That call that sounds a bit like a sheep is its sort of lost call. Sort of, where's mum? Juan Fernandez fur seal belongs to a group of seals called the eared seals, and they're distinguished from true seals by 2 things. One is the fact that they have external ears, which you can actually see quite clearly, whereas seals that you get in the UK, for example, just have little holes in the sides of their heads. And the other is that they swim using their 4 flippers, and their tails are used more for steering and balance. The result of that is that the fur seals have more use of their flippers, front and back. And if we were unlucky enough for a bull fur seal to decide to chase us on a really rocky, uneven beach like the one here, then chances are the fur seal would be able to run faster than we could. Oh, there's a male here just threatening Douglas, who's about 4 or 5 feet away photographing it, and it got just a little bit nervous. Oh, here comes the mother of this little pup. Get ready. Yeah.
We've just had to beat a rapid retreat because the female seal, which was the mother of the little cub we were looking at, suddenly came charging up across the rocks at us. That's it. That's the one.
It's actually a male. It's not a female. It's quite a big one. About 7 feet. That's him calling now, and you can see the furry mane around his neck really clearly. And he's probably the father of all these pups that are around us. When you think about it, you can see why so many seals have been killed in the past, not only here, but all over the world. I mean, they're so easy to kill. It's awful. You just climb up onto the rocks like this, and here they are all around you, and they're very valuable animals. Santa Clara, the smallest island in the group, in the same little vessel we used the other day. And the sea's got fairly rough. As we go up to the top of each wave and free fall down into the trough, there's cracking sounds as the boat seems to start splitting apart. As always in these sort of circumstances, Douglas has been sick. He's just come down.
No, I've tried to be sick, I haven't managed.
Oh, bad luck. He's soaking wet, having been standing out on the deck. And the sound man's just taken his place, and he's now leaning over the side, looking terribly pale and feeling sorry for himself.
I'm next.
Now, the weather here is more like Scotland than you'd imagine it should be for the South Pacific. Because yesterday and the day before were really nice, really hot and sunny. We woke up this morning to find the sky full of clouds and drizzling with rain. It's now pouring with rain and very cloudy and misty.
The crew of the boat seem to find it very funny that we keep on being seasick. The moment we start to feel better again, they instantly slap a badly warped Neil Diamond tape onto a cassette player, and that starts us off again. I must say, though, that whatever I think of their sense of humour, a lot of the fate of the fur seals is in the hands of these fishermen, and they are determined to protect them. They have a strong sense of identity with the bull seals, which they like to feel are big, strong, macho beasts like themselves. More importantly, perhaps, they have realised that the seals eat a lot of the squid. And since the squid eat a lot of the lobsters, which the fishermen depend on for their livelihood, they have a vested interest in the seals surviving and maintaining a healthy appetite. In many ways, they know more about the seals than anybody. For much of this century, scientists believed that the seal was actually extinct, and it was only the fishermen who continued to insist that the seals weren't extinct, merely hiding. They were officially rediscovered in 1965, when a colony of 200 of them was found in one of the oldest of the rookeries. Very occasionally, a few seals are killed for meat when times are hard, but the sealskin trade is now a thing of the past.
Now that we've actually landed on Santa Clara Island, I'm beginning to feel more like a human being. I really felt I was going to die on that boat. Having had a look around here, I must say, I think that Alexander Selkirk was pretty well off, actually. Compared to the Santa Clara, Robinson Crusoe Island is pretty much of a paradise. We're sitting here on a rocky outcrop, which is wind-lashed and rain-lashed and sea-lashed. And we've just seen some seals over 100 yards away from us in the distance.
The poor bulls have to stay here for up to 10 weeks at a stretch without eating a thing, and every so often fighting or scaring off other males.
they can't leave the beach once they're here and they've got their harem. If they leave to go into the sea to feed, then they're going to lose it. Another male is immediately going to take the opportunity and come in and take over the harem. While most of the fights are just displays or threats, they do sometimes really battle, and it's not unusual for a bull fur seal to actually die as a result of one of the fights. You can probably see on some of them they've got scars and so on already. And in fact, it's such a tough life that your average bull... There we are, it's calling now. That your average bull doesn't manage to keep a harem for more than 2 or 3 years at a stretch.
They're fighting.
Fighting, obviously over some problem with one of the females, and it's really vicious. They've got very sharp teeth, just like dog's teeth, and they're hitting the sides of their heads together.
Really?
This is all happening 5 yards from us. But you can see how the furry mane really helps to protect them. I mean, there's no blood as far as I can see yet. Then again, there's also a thick layer of blubber underneath.
Wow!
One of them's got hold of the other one's lower jaw and is just shaking its head. Now it does look as if it's cut. Can you see?
Oh, yeah.
God,
that's
so
really
vicious.
God, they're taking great lumps out of each other.
And now the other one's got a nasty cut on his neck.
This is really quite upsetting. They're so heavy and so fat and blubbery, when one of them suddenly makes a darting movement with its head for the other one, it's really sort of quite frightening. Something that looks that sort of soft and cuddly suddenly becoming so violently mobile.
They're going to go on like this until one of them submits and gives in. And then it'll get chased off by the other. That was it, the fight's over. One of the males submitted and went charging across the rocks and dived into the water. And the other one chased after him.
They're all looking at us right at the moment.
I think we should stay back for a little while, because we're obviously upsetting them a bit.
Yeah.
On top of all the territorial fighting.
You have to keep on reminding yourself that this is not a display put on in a zoo, and it's not something you're watching on television. You're actually out here in the wild. This is their home life. I mean, this is... You're watching the way they live. I mean, it's all sex and violence.
Luckily, these days, most of the violence which the Juan Fernandez fur seals endure is self-inflicted. In 1766, there were 3.5 million fur seals. Earlier this century, there were maybe a couple of hundred. Since they've been protected, their numbers have been increasing steadily, and now there are maybe as many as 7,000 of them. And counting.